The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio. Coming up on the program today, it's about feeding your soil in the lawn and the garden this fall, as well as kitchen hacks. Our guest will be author Stephen Biggs, and we'll answer your garden questions. The hour's jam-packed, and it starts right now.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you're joining us for this hour of programming. I am your host, Joey Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, and preserving what you grow. We thank you for tuning in, whether you're listening to us on one of the 15 AM and FM frequencies that are broadcasting our program here in 2021, through a radio app, through our parent website, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, at the Season 5 tab at the top of the page, or podcast replay or in-studio video replay. We thank you for doing such, and we hear you out there. We see the downloads come in for those who missed the live program, and we greatly appreciate you doing such and catching up when you're not able to get it live or if it's not in your area. There's a couple of ways in which you can contact us. If you'd like to speak with us directly, you can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-7469. Or you can send us an email, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Put that in your contact so you always have it readily available. If you want to send us an email to say hi, how are you doing? We'd love to hear that. Love to hear where you're listening from. If you've got a specific problem or situation, give us a couple of different images, one up close, one far back, because it's kind of hard to identify things when they're a football field away, trying to see what is this bug type of thing.
Right. That's very helpful.
So let's get into the program, Holly, and talk about feeding our soil in the fall in the yard and the garden, because many people, it's a gardening show. Gardening can be yard, can be landscaping as well. It can be a lot of different things. It's not just, tomatoes and peppers.
Right, for sure. So, so feeding your yard or your lawn is very important in the fall. This is what most people do, and they people who really care about their lawns a lot will do this. And one thing that you want to do is you want to apply nitrogen to your lawn.
Now, nitrogen being what number on the fertilizer bag?
Something like a 25-5-5.
Okay.
That's the first number.
First number. No matter where you're, whether you're in Dubai, whether you're in Australia, whether you're in Seattle, first number of every fertilizer bag is nitrogen.
Right. Nitrogen. So that's what you want something. I mean, you could go like with a 25-0-0 or whatever, but typically it's going to be like a 25-5-5. And if you're not sure, you can go to your local garden center.
Independent, preferably.
Independent garden center and say like, this is the first time I've had a lawn and I want to feed it. And they will help you.
There is fertilizer bags that have like 90-0-0. That's way too much nitrogen for the fall. You want something in that 20 range. Specifically.
Right, that's what the Colorado State University Extension says.
Okay, well, we'll
go
off then.
Go with that.
Yeah, we're going to go with that. So, and that's really all you need to do about the lawn is just feed it. And now people will typically mow their lawn. Some people mow their lawn twice every week. Mm-hmm. But there is a certain period of time when you want to stop mowing your lawn, assuming you're one of these people that likes your lawn and really is spending a lot of time taking care of your lawn. There's some people that could give a not behind
right
about their lawn.
Right. So, so feeding your lawn is important. Like, you can do this in September, October.
Right
most
now.
Areas. Yeah. And, yeah, so you want to stop cutting your lawn when the daytime temperatures consistently stay below 50 degrees.
Okay.
Not 50 below. Below 50 degrees.
Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit.
We do Fahrenheit because we're in America. I don't know what that's in Celsius, but Fahrenheit, 50 degrees, consistent. You look at the long-range forecast 10, 15 days out, you're shooting 45-50, stop cutting the grass, no matter where the grass is at that particular time.
Right, right.
Assuming it's not a field that, you know, you left for hay.
I don't think many people have a field for hay.
Have you been in some of these neighborhoods?
Anyway, so
They haven't cut their grass since the turn of the century.
You're going to feed your lawn before you stop cutting the grass.
Okay.
Typically.
So, like, you're looking at the long-range forecast. You're going to see the daytime temperatures begin to dip down. So about 2 weeks before,
you don't even figure that out.
Okay,
you just figure September, October, I'm going to feed my lawn.
Regardless. And then when the temperatures...
Then that's when you stop mowing.
Put that lawnmower in the garage shed and cover it up and don't look at it again until spring.
And then you get out the shovels and the snowblower.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the lawn.
That's how you feed your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You can top dress it. I mean, you could top dress it with some compost if you have compost laying around. If you buy in bulk.
Some people will seed their lawns in the fall, too.
Which is preferred.
Yeah.
Which is preferred.
That's an option. And you want to, there's all sorts of information about that, but you can kind of thatch it in.
Just because it's October 15th and you're going, oh, I can seed the lawn, that doesn't mean you should seed the lawn in October. There's a certain time period and warmth that and all that. So you figure it out what's best for your particular area. But if you can still get it in, seeding your lawn right now is the best time to do such. All right, so we've got the lawn taken care of. Let's talk about the garden. What can we do to feed our garden? We not necessarily want a packet full of nitrogen. You never want to do that in a garden because the plants are going to suck all the nitrogen up, get big green in the spring, and nothing, no good there. And you don't want to put fertilizer in the garden in the fall because it will be used up or it will... leach, you know,
snow melting, rain, whatever, it's going to wash it out typically.
Right. Yeah, it's going to make it ineffective by the time spring comes.
Right.
So don't do that.
No, you don't want to add fertilizer. If you have homemade compost that you know is not going to create more weeds for you.
What does that mean?
A hot compost where the weed seeds become, inactive. Then you can add a layer of that. Some people will till their garden. We don't encourage tilling, but some people will till their garden in the fall to till like the plant life underneath the soil.
To let it break down.
That's up to you.
No, we don't encourage the tilling, and there's a few reasons why. One, there's a lot of life under the soil. When you physically till, now we are all we're in raised beds now. But you know, even when we dug potatoes or when we would work a bed, we would use a garden fork to lessen the damage on, you know, like earthworms.
Right.
But we don't till because there's a lot of microbial life. You're disturbing a lot of structure that's been put in there for the specific purpose of helping plants grow better.
Mm-hmm.
And when you till it up, you shake all that up and turn it upside down and basically cause everything to restart the cycle.
Right.
There is purposes and reasons why one may need to till, but generally, we wouldn't recommend it.
No. But, okay, so yeah, you can till. You can till your plant life back into your soil, or you can just pull, like say you got a bunch of tomato plants, you can pull them out and just place them on top of the garden.
Right, assuming they're not been diseased.
Right, if they're diseased or something, you want to throw them away.
Right, with any plant life.
Right. Any plant.
In the trash, not in the street. Not in the compost.
Or fire pit.
Right,
or anything
right.
Like that. Yeah. So you can do that. So let's talk about leaves.
Okay.
This is our favorite thing, and this is what everybody's favorite thing should be to put on your
garden.
It's
free.
In the fall. Right. Leaves. So first, they're free.
Uh-huh.
Second, they provide you mulch. So you could put a thick layer, and they break down very quickly or by the time spring comes.
By June the next year, you don't even know. Whether you've shredded them, that quickens the breakdown process. We do not shred them, which gives us a little more life on them before they break down and feed the soil.
Right. And that one year, remember you put like a ton of, like a literal ton of leaves?
Yeah, 2,000 some odd pounds because I calculated what each barrel of leaves out of the street would, you know.
Yeah.
77 barrels at so many pounds, it was a little over 2,000 pounds.
Right. So what you can
do... Yes, I did that. Yes.
Yes. Now, when you go collect leaves, you're like, I don't have that many trees. Well, you can always collect them from your neighbors.
Right.
You can walk down. A lot of times the neighbor will put them in the, what's it called?
The gutter.
Yeah, the by the side of the
In the street.
In the street.
Now, if you're in a rural area, leaves are pretty easy to come by. If you've got a small garden or whatever, you can go to the edge of the woods and, you know, pick a bed of a pickup truck full of leaves and take it back to the garden type of thing.
Right.
And it's much easier to find the leaves already stacked up in the street in an urban city situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been times where we raked the neighbor's lawn.
Yes.
Before.
And the neighbor across the street would say, these are the good leaves, these are the dirty leaves, these have other stuff in it, and,
yeah.
Because she knew what we were doing.
Right.
And yeah. And nobody questioned at all. Maybe they think, you know, silently we're the crazy people, but, you know, we've been called worse.
I mean, people just assume that about us anyway. So anyway, so leaves. So the nice thing about leaves is, one, it creates a mulch. So maybe you're like, well, I don't want to put, you know, I only want to put so many leaves, but I want to save leaves for mulch for the spring. That's an option, too.
You can bag them up in paper bags and stack them in a garage if they're dry, or in the back corner, just stack them like straw bales and then use them as you need them through the summer months. A lot of people do that.
Some people have a compost turner,
mm-hmm.
and they'll save leaves to put in there during winter because their kitchen scraps are too much nitrogen.
Too wet, too much
too
moisture.
Too much green. So they'll toss in, you know, like a couple handful of leaves.
So if you have a compost pile that is suitable to put in your lawn or your yard, in your garden, you can do that, even if it's not all the way broke down. If you know the seeds have been fried or exceeded the core temperature for 72 hours of 150 degrees or more, then you can add that in the fall. You can also trench in or, you know, layer over partially broke down compost, and that will, you know, it'll break down over the winter months slowly. But as the spring warms up, you can still, you know, utilize that as well. You know, if it's, you know, 60% broke down, 70%, you can go ahead and put that in the garden. Trenching meaning you can physically, like if here is a bed, you know, where you're going to put your tomatoes next year. You can dig a trench like you would be, you know, a traditional potato, you know, like you plant potatoes in a drill, like 6-8 inches deep. Flip that soil up, put that compost in that trench, cover it back up, and then that's where you're going to plant your tomatoes. So you've basically enriched the bed or the grow specific row of where the tomatoes will be or the peppers or the eggplants or whatever. So you've got a jump start on that. So all you got to do in the spring, put your tomato in the ground, maybe add a little organic fertilizer. Boom, you're done. You've already enriched the soil last fall with the compost that's broke down or partially broke down. And it's a win-win.
Right. So, yeah. And I just wanted to mention you can also do a cover crop type of situation.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You can do anything that's like a large seed. So you can do things such as peas, vetch. You can even do wheat, which seems kind of strange for a garden, but it could be helpful.
Barley,
ryegrass, buckwheat, any of that. And that what happens is that will put that green manure essentially into your soil during the winter.
Well, yeah, it's growing, and then in the spring, as the soil can be worked, you're tilling that under, and then it's breaking down and feeding the soil to some degree. So that's, and it also keeps the soil covered.
Right.
It doesn't leave that, and that's part of the key to the leaves and what we use is because you don't let the soil get exposed. We've all seen this in our garden where the garden has been barren and the soil is the soil looks very, you know, dried out and winded because of the wind and the snow and the rain, all that. And when you lift up the area that has been covered with leaves or mulch or whatever it is, looks very healthy and happy. You see you see a lot of things moving around, worms and, you know, creepy crawly things. So very big importance of covering your soil to keep it healthy over the winter months.
So speaking of that, as we move away from summer, now we're thinking about harvest time. And the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by our sponsors, Walton's Inc. And soon you might be harvesting furry friends from the woods. Uh-huh. And we know you care about where your food comes from, but canning, preserving your fruits and vegetables is great. But what about the meat? At Walton's, you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. Do you want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created MeatGistics.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. Walton's even has a full line of their meat grinders, mixers, and sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's, everything but the meat.
And they've got a new coupon code available for anybody who's interested. Use coupon code GROW22 and save 10% off your order of $50 or more and get free shipping.
And that's waltonsinc.com.
When we come back, hang around, do not go anywhere. It's going to be kitchen hacks, things that will help you motivate and move through your kitchen activities quicker. You're listening to The Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
We here at the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show Gardens understand that healthy soil is the key to a successful garden. We know that chemical fertilizer burns carbon out of the soil and kills the microbes needed for a healthy soil ecosystem. No worries. Chicken Soup for the Soil by Dr. Jims will stimulate life into your soil, supplying all the nutrients most fertilizers neglect. Rather than force-feeding water-soluble chemical fertilizer, we suggest feeding the microbes a smorgasbord of 100% biodegradable nutrients that your plants can consume when they need them. The nutrients are readily available to maximize their genetic potential. Chicken Soup for the Soil will increase the quality of the fruit and vegetables you grow. Visit drjims.com. That's drjims.com. The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple-gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code RADIO21 and get 15% off your entire order.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online. Straight from the farm, fields, and briar patch, Piper and Leaf Artisan Tea is a tea like you've never imagined it. Get our award-winning tea delivered right to your front door and become part of the Piper and Leaf family. Free shipping over $75 at PiperandLeaf.com.
Turf experts always say lawn season begins in the fall. It's the time to help grasses recover from summer stresses and thicken up so it can come back strong in the spring. This fall, you can fertilize, aerate, and dethatch your lawn using just one fantastic liquid product. It's called Lawn Force 5, a five-way lawn care kit in a bottle. Lawn Force 5 gives you a lush, healthy lawn you can be proud of. It improves your soil in a way that gives your lawn great color using 75% less nitrogen than typical lawn fertilizers. Visit our friends at natureslawn.com to find out more about this amazing Lawn Force 5 product. That's natureslawn.com.
The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Pro Plugger, Dripworks, Walton's Incorporated, Tree Diaper, Janie's Mill, Phylum Bioproducts, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Nature's Lawn and Garden Incorporated, Deer Defeat, Dr. Jim's, Root Maker. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Thank you for being with us on the program today. Watering, problem that many of us face. Tree Diaper has the solution to that problem.
Tree Diaper is a revolutionary watering system that slowly releases water on the base of any tree or plant as the soil dries. The Tree Diaper is filled with water from rain when you water and slowly releases water over 3 weeks. Every time it rains, Tree Diaper recharges. No pipes, hoses, or electricity needed. Water your plants and trees when they are by the house, down the road, or in the back 40. Also works under mulch. Whether you're a first-time gardener or advanced gardener, Tree Diaper will improve the way you water your plants. It's made in the USA. You can find all the information at treediaper.com. That's treediaper.com.
Well, whenever it comes to techniques or tips, people always are excited to learn things in which they can make the job easier. I think it wasn't it Mark Twain that said, give a tough job to a lazy person and they'll figure out how to make it easier or something like that.
I think it was something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm paraphrasing.
Somebody's probably shaking their fists at the radio right now.
Kitchen hacks.
Kitchen hacks.
We see a lot of these online if you're on social media, but not all of them are accurate or even somewhat correct. It's more of a, exciting click, click, click type of thing rather than an actual, hey, this really works thing.
And sometimes it's like use coffee filters to line something and you're like that coffee filter is going to break down immediately.
So we've got a handful of them here that will help you. One, let's start with
this is your
the pudding. Whenever you go to the store, because we all don't, or even if you've picked your own, your berries, your strawberries, your raspberries, your blackberries, whatever the case is, put them in a glass mason jar and then seal them up, whether you're using an actual lid or, some type of aluminum foil, something to seal the air in and keep the air out. And we find that by doing this, the strawberries last about 2 to 3 times longer. You put the whole strawberry in there. The berries last 2 or 3 times longer than just keeping them in the little plastic container that you get from the store. It's amazing how this works. It's really cool because these things are not cheap to purchase, and then if you can keep them for 2 to 3 times longer, you're not having to buy and eat right away. You can kind of plan things out a little bit better.
Yeah. So another one, and I like this one because I like to eat eggs and I'm not always sure if my eggs are good or not. So you take a bowl of water and then you put your egg in there, and if it floats, it means it's no good.
If it floats, it's a nope.
Yeah, it's a no. But if it sinks, you're A-okay or something. No, there's a little rhyme for that.
I mean, and whenever many of you may have chickens, and this is not a concern to you, but you'd be surprised of the time frame from when a chicken's egg is harvested to the time it gets to your grocery store. It can be not just days; it can be weeks in order. And they check the eggs and all this other stuff. But there is a time shelf on these things, and you want to check them if it's questionable, because there's nothing worse than cooking with a bad egg and then potentially getting you sick and everybody else sick.
Right, especially because you might not.
Here's the thing.
You could try to smell the egg, but you might, if you're making like a, some over easy eggs, you're not going to sit there and try to smell an egg as you're putting into the hot pan.
And a dozen eggs is like average $2.50. That's a whole lot cheaper to throw out than a hospital visit.
Right.
Even with good insurance.
Right. Exactly. So this is another one of your hacks, is peeling the garlic by shaking it in the two bowls.
Okay. So you take two aluminum mixing bowls. One, usually get like a large one and a medium one and a tiny one. So what you can do is take the large one and the medium one and invert them, put the garlic inside of them and vigorously shake. And for whatever reason, the metal on the bowls react to the skin and causes the skin virtually to fall off, or makes it to the point where it's so simple and easy to just flake it off. So it works. It's very loud, but it works really, really well. So you're going to take two. I guess they're aluminum pans, aren't they, Holly, or some type of
aluminum, like stainless steel.
Stainless steel bowls. Mixing bowls.
Yeah.
And then you just take and enclose them and just shake it violently, and the skins will pop off.
Yeah, it's pretty ingenious, I would say. So then another one, and this one I like, is making your own buttermilk or sour milk. Now it won't taste and it won't be as thick as like true buttermilk, but it gets it to that curdly acidity. So if you're making like buttermilk pancakes or a baked good where it requires buttermilk,
right?
It's the same scientific concept. So what you do is you take a tablespoon of lemon juice, like bottled lemon juice or white vinegar, to 1 cup of milk. So that's your equation.
Yeah, okay.
Measurement.
Mixture.
Whatever. And then you just stir it. You just leave it for a few minutes. And then
the acidity of the lemon juice will break down.
It kind of sours it.
Sours it. So yeah. It's a cheap version of buttermilk.
Yeah, it's like maybe you don't need
the redneck version.
Yeah, the redneck version. Or maybe you just don't need, you know, maybe right. You don't need a pint or a quart or whatever of buttermilk.
Because there are some people that buttermilk is their choice of beverage. They like the buttermilk. I like the buttermilk. Buttermilk is good. I like, yeah, you like buttermilk like you like rhubarb pie. So that's a...
I mean, it's not for me. But okay. I like buttermilk ranch.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a quick, easy way to make a little small version of kind of buttermilk if you need it. To do that. When you're reheating baked goods, put a glass of water in the microwave, and that will help keep things moist and not cause them to dry out
right.
like a brick.
So it's not like a hockey puck, essentially. So this right. is something like you could do this with leftover pizza, garlic breadsticks, things like that.
I did find this out. You know, we've all got the clamping, you know, the George Foreman or the Hampton, whatever, the grill that closes that you can cook hamburgers on and all the grease runs off. If you get one of those pita things from Taco Bell and you put it in the microwave, it dries out really bad. But if you reheat it in that, it's just like it came off the grill.
Just like
you got it from the you can let it sit in the fridge for 2 days, redo that just like you got it from the drive-thru.
Well, look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job. So there you go. There's another reheating. We have an air fryer.
Right.
And
best thing we ever bought besides a printer that we have. But that's besides the point.
And we bought a cheap one. I think it was like $50 or something. And it was questionable for a minute. And now it's working well again. But
it got scared that we were going to get rid of it.
I think so. But that is amazing for reheating a lot of leftovers.
It gets rid of the grease.
Yeah.
And actually makes the food taste better.
It does. And like French fries, if you have leftover French fries, you can reheat them in there.
Now, for people who don't know what an air fryer is, it's simply basically an oven that pushes the air around with a fan and actually cooks things the way things should be cooked.
Yeah.
It doesn't cook one side more than the other. It actually, you know, does, I mean, with fries, you have to shake the basket. But other than that, it adds more crisp to it, adds more taste to it. It doesn't dry it out. It keeps the moisture in it. Really good.
And you can put all sorts of stuff in there. You don't have to just put
I cooked an egg in there for you. I put it in a glass pan and cooked the egg in there for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you not remember that?
No.
It must have been that bad, huh?
Anyway, the air fryer, and you don't have to just cook frozen things. You can cook, people put asparagus in there, zucchini.
Oh, anything.
Anything. Yeah. Lots of good stuff. So we put, what was that? Did we do sunchokes in there?
Sunchokes in there. Sunchoke chips. The Jerusalem artichokes are sunchokes. Scrub them, and here's the key we found. Peel them first, then cut them thin, roll them or shake them in some olive oil, and fry them in the air fryer. Absolutely phenomenal. If you leave the skin on, they're going to have an earthy taste. No matter how much you scrub the skins, you want to peel the skins. It's just the best way to go on that.
Right. And some people, if you buy an air fryer, you can put like a whole chicken in it. Ours, I don't think would
hold
a whole chicken, but it's an option if you get a big enough one. So the air fryer. So you can reheat. Here's another tip. You can reheat your pasta dishes in the microwave more evenly by putting a hole in the middle. So if you got like a plate of spaghetti, you kind of just take it and move the spaghetti aside so that there's like a center.
Like
hole.
It's a donut. Like a donut.
Like a donut. Yeah. Like a spaghetti donut.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's how microwaves work is I guess they cook from the inside out.
And some people really don't like using a microwave because they have found that when using a microwave, they don't feel good after eating or days after because of the waves of the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep away from the microwave for weeks, they feel a lot more healthier, I guess is the term. They don't feel so icky inside. There is scientific and doctors have told people, if you're having issues, and we're not doctors, so don't quote us on this, talk to your physician, that avoid cooking things in the microwave can actually improve your health. Now, I think there is some truth to that somehow, somewhere. So take that for what it's worth.
Right. So there's that. So then another hack is to, if you have a microwave that maybe has like some crusted food on the inside, you can take a
because
sponge.
Because the chili exploded or
spaghetti or, you know, whatever. You can take a sponge and put it, you know, get it damp, put it in the microwave for about a minute or so, and then it will help, A, disinfect the sponge, and B, that steam hotness will help loosen the inside of the microwave, like the grime or whatever.
Yep. Keeping that moisture in the microwave, just like we talked about with the baked good, adding that moisture will make a great big difference when it comes to cleaning it as well as cooking in it too.
Yeah. So another thing you can do is if you want to save your pans a bit, you can use parchment paper. And not everybody thinks about this. I learned. I thought everybody knew this, and I've told people this, and they think it's absolutely brilliant. So you can use the parchment paper, especially if you don't, maybe you don't have muffin tin things. What are those called?
Muffin liners. Yeah,
you can use parchment paper for that. Especially if you cook something like stinky or like fish,
right,
or like a garlic, you can save your pans that way, or greasy, oily, whatever.
That's a great way to limit the amount of cleaning that you need to do if you can put that parchment paper or on the bottom of those things. Also, whenever in the microwave, to keep the stuff exploding, just paper towel on top of it. I mean, it seems simple, but it works very well.
Right. And then another, it's not really a hack, it's more of like a safety thing. Know how to put out kitchen fires.
Have a fire extinguisher.
Have a fire extinguisher, but also know, like,
that works.
That works, right?
It's not a decor item. Right. That it works.
Yeah, and they sell all sorts of, like, mini kitchen home extinguishers,
right,
all over. You know, you can find them pretty easily.
Because I know what people are thinking. Well, it's $27. $27 is a cheap price to pay than having to rebuild the kitchen or half the house.
Right. Or put a claim on your renter's insurance.
Right. $27 for an item that you hope and cross your fingers and pray you never, ever need to use.
Exactly.
And you want to check it. These things do expire. Every year,
right,
you want to check it. I don't know what the life expectancy on it. But in our area, where we live, we have it checked every year. And it either gets recharged or replaced because we much rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
But there's also ways you can put kitchen fires out. You can, like, dump baking soda or flour on grease fires.
Cover them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to put water on a grease
fire. Right. Be smart of what you're cooking. If, for example, you've got a gas range and you've got a lot of splattering of grease, be careful what else you turn on or what's going on around you or what's there, because that grease can be ignited by another burner, or even if it's not a gas range. Things can get ignited in ways that you didn't know was possible because you never thought about it.
And I'm going to segue.
Yes, go ahead.
A little hack, not hack, but October is fire safety month. And so there you go. And also, you should check your smoke detector batteries when we change the clocks back, is that in October?
November.
Oh, well,
in the United States, it's November.
October is fire safety month. So think about being smart in your kitchen and safe.
With that being said, summer is over, nights are getting cooler, kids are in school, and we talked about it earlier in the show, but you've forgotten about your lawn, and there's some things that you shouldn't have forgot about it because.
Right, just because it's fall, we don't want to forget about our yard and those Japanese beetles. They may be gone, but they're not far. Not only did they feast on your roses and berries this summer, they laid eggs in your turf so that they can start again next year. You take a stand with Phylum's Grub Gun. Grub Gun is a non-chemical BT granular that specifically targets scarab pests and their larvae. All you do is you apply with a spreader area into soil and let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
The best part about it is Grub Gone is easy to use, and it's the non-chemical choice that effectively controls grubs. And the best part about it, it's safe to be used around butterflies, bees, and other beneficial insects. So you don't have to worry about getting it on the petals and then them taking it back to their hives and toxifying the hives and killing them off. It's Grub Gone from PhylumBioProducts.com, the natural choice. That's PhylumBioProducts.com, bioproducts.com. Well, hang out. Don't go anywhere. When we get back, it's going to be Stephen Biggs, author. You're listening to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Tired of dealing with bugs but don't want to use harmful chemicals to repel them? Naturally Green, No More Bugs is all natural and plant-based. No more chemical bug repellent. Use it around your home and on you, indoors and out, DEET-free, and will not stain. Repels mosquitoes, ticks, fleas, roaches, ants, flies, and more. No More Bugs is the answer to what is bugging you. Stop using harmful chemicals and use what is safe for you, your family, pets, and the environment. For more information, visit natgreenproducts.com. natgreenproducts.com.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com. Dig planting holes from a comfortable standing position. Step, twist, pull, and plant. Visit proplugger.com.
Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you. The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Simply Earth, Seed Savers Exchange, Quick Snap Sprinklers, Water Hoop, Timber Pro Coatings, Bloomin' Easy Plants, Pomona Universal Pectin, Ivy Organics, Tiger Torch, Happy Leaf LED, Seedlink. Find all sponsors at theWisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Moments away, Stephen Biggs will be with us. But first, yellow jackets still flying around because it's warm in your area? Well, Rescue has the product to fix that.
Yeah, during these end of summer months, early fall, with the warm temperatures, you'll notice that the yellow jackets become more aggressive.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, they're looking for your barbecue meats. Maybe you're out for a Sunday brunch.
Or just trying to enjoy your backyard.
You want to keep them at bay with the Rescue Yellow Jacket traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket traps are eco-friendly, do-it-yourself option to keep these stinging pests away from you. These traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets, and they will not kill beneficial bees or attract beneficial honeybees. All Rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com to find these products, including the yellow jacket traps and more. That's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Stephen Biggs is an author, horticulturist, college professor, and podcast host. He is passionate about incorporating edible crops into the landscape to create beautiful edible landscapes with a long and varied harvest. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day, not only educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the United States. You're in Canada, so I'll define that so people kind of know what we're referencing there. You grow in wicking beds. What are they, and what can be grown in a wicking bed?
I'm really excited about wicking beds because it's a pretty low-tech thing that a lot of people can do. So you can think of a wicking bed as nothing more than a raised bed with a reservoir in the bottom. So there's water stored in the bottom. And what happens is that that water moves upwards. It's wicking upwards, called capillary action. And the wick is actually the soil. So it's a really effective and low-tech option that people can make at home or maybe buy. But the advantage to it is that the water is used very efficiently, and so it's often used in arid climates, places where there's water restrictions because there's less evaporation and you don't have runoff. And but it doesn't mean that you have to use it in an arid climate. Here in Toronto, we have ample precipitation, and it works really nicely for me. Now, we didn't actually put it in so that we would have to water less. We actually came to it in a completely different way. What happened is my next door neighbor has a big black walnut tree. And for listeners who don't know about black walnut trees, they can poison some of our crops, tomatoes being one of them. So we couldn't grow tomatoes in more than half of our backyard. And we tried a few different things. And then I got thinking one day, well, if I put in a wicking bed and my tomato roots never got into that walnut contaminated soil below, then we could grow tomatoes, and it's worked beautifully.
So when we talk about a wicking bed, are we talking about a fixture that is elevated above the ground, or is this encased in the ground but with a barrier to keep things from coming in and going out?
Well, you could do it either way.
Okay.
The ones that I've always seen have been raised above the ground, but there's no reason that you couldn't have it in the ground too. The other thing I should mention is that it's an idea that is scalable. So my particular beds, I made them 4 feet by 8 feet, raised beds. But you could do this on a far smaller scale, too. And I've seen people, you'll hear it called sub-irrigation planters, but it's the same idea, wicking, where they have containers that have a reservoir in the bottom, and you're getting the water to wick upwards. And in terms of making them, I'd really love people to take home the message that you can use recycled materials. I've seen people use old plastic shipping containers. In my own ones, I decided not to use dimensional lumber because I was able to get some old cedar fence posts, which worked beautifully, and they'll last longer than dimensional lumber. So I'd say if people are interested in this idea, don't be shy to be creative, because you can really adapt it to your own situation.
That's definitely very interesting. So you love growing figs and have two different books about growing figs. One is called Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of your questions answered, and then Growing Figs Where You Think You Can't. So why figs? Mm-hmm. What are some challenges, and why are some reasons to grow figs?
Okay. Well, so for me in Toronto, obviously figs, I'm really pushing the boundaries, and that's a fun challenge for me. But the thing is with figs is that when you pick them and they're immature, they don't ripen anymore. But to be shipped, they have to be picked before they're perfectly ripe. So the ones that we might find at the supermarket, the so-called fresh figs, they're never as good and jammy and sweet as the ones that we can grow ourselves. So that's really the top reason to grow figs, aside from all the different varieties too. And a friend of mine here in the Toronto area was up to 300 different varieties, I think, at one point, all different colors and shapes and tastes. Key point about figs is that they can take more cold than a lot of people realize. And so what that means is that if we are creative gardeners, we can often find a way to make them work in cold climate gardeners. And if you're growing figs in the ground, I like to throw out about 14 Fahrenheit as a winter low. They can sometimes take colder than that too, but that's a pretty safe temperature. In pots, you can't go quite as cold, so probably 23 Fahrenheit is a safe lower limit. But what that means with those temperatures, if you're growing in pots, for example, I have an insulated garage, so I just roll my fig plants into the garage for the winter. If you're in a cold climate and you have figs growing in the ground, some people in colder areas, like here in Toronto, they'll lay the plants flat to the ground and mulch them. Or some people build a structure around them. So if you're creative, you can get them to survive through the winter.
Very, very interesting. You like to do untraditional things with food. What is something that you've tried and now has become a favorite recipe or food hack that you've found on your own?
Well, Joey, I'll keep going on that fig theme, is because I learned a couple years ago that you can actually use fig leaves in the kitchen. And when you use fig leaves, they're giving this really great flavor. There's a bit of almond, a bit of coconut, maybe some green fig in there, but it's a taste of its own. You're not actually eating the leaf, but you're pulling out that flavor. So my absolute favorite thing to make with it, it's a fig leaf panna cotta, which is just like a creamy pudding. But I had a chef on a recent podcast who gave me a whole bunch of tips on how to use fig leaves. And one of the things that he did was make a fig leaf grappa.
Very interesting. Well, tell us the story. Where in your life did the fig experience birth? Where was it? Somebody that showed you a fig or gave you a fig? How did that become a lot of your focus?
I started with a cutting as a teenager. I was an avid gardener even as a teenager. And didn't really know what to do with it, but over the years, I met a couple neighbors who showed me what they were doing with figs. But what especially sparked my interest was I worked at a nursery in the UK for a summer that specialized in figs. So I was grazing off fresh figs all summer, and that really, really cemented this fascination with figs.
Abby.
Well, you have a gardening podcast as well. It's the Food Garden Life show. What is it about, and how can people tune in and tell us more about it?
Oh, thanks, Holly. Well, the show is with my daughter, Emma, who's 16. And I should just say that she's kind of an over-the-top gardener like me. And so it's a passion that we share. And we had already a monthly radio show. But when COVID came and she was stuck home from school, we said, hey, let's just hang out and podcast weekly. So we started to share some of the things that really inspire us and kind of celebrating food gardens, food, but also that human side of gardening and people doing cool things. So we've got our shtick down pretty well now. Listeners don't see this, but we're always gesticulating as we talk to our guests and scribbling notes and trying to guide the conversation. And so we've had a lot of fun. Like recently we had a guy from Newfoundland, third windiest city in the world, telling us all about his root crops and passive greenhouse, or the Indiana Jones of pawpaw, telling us about how did he get into pawpaw and why did that consume his life. So it's been a fun project. And we have it on our website, which is foodgardenlife.com. But it's also on a lot of those syndicators like Google, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify. So if people just look up the Food Garden Life show, that's us.
And you like us, people don't realize how many notes get shoved across the table back and forth and trying to decipher the scribbleness of what each other is saying behind the mic, so you don't have to say it out loud while things are going on. So you understand that as much as we do.
I'm happy to hear we're not the only ones.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You really enjoy gardening with your daughter, your children. What do you do to keep them involved and interested throughout their ages, from small to big? There's short attention spans. What have you found to keep them entertained and occupied and interested?
Well, so I should say my kids now, my boys are 12 and 13, and my daughter Emma, I mentioned, is 16. But when they were little, what I did is I just tried to show them all sorts of things in the garden beyond just growing plants. So whether it was making a mud pie or playing with bugs, maybe edible weeds, and just hope that something would click, thinking maybe it would be different for each kid. So one, it turned out, loves bugs. One was more interested in birds, and then Emma, it was tomatoes in a big way. Now my youngest guy, Keaton, is crazy for melons, and he was over the moon this year because he harvested a few melons. But I think that a key piece of advice for parents would be we don't have to expect kids to garden the way that adults garden. It might be messy, might not be pretty, but the hope is that something will spark. And if you're not sure where to go, maybe pick a kind of project. One year we did a sunflower house. We planted a little square of giant sunflowers to make a little hideout for the kids. That was a huge hit. For my younger son, Keaton, I made him a bug vacuum. He loved it. People might want to think about a theme garden. If you have a kid who loves pizza, what about a pizza garden or a salsa garden? And I should say, too, though, don't be hard on yourself if it doesn't work out. I have two of my kids are avid gardeners now, but my middle one, Quinn, he's not interested. When I had them picking currants this year, he was equating that to child labor. So I jokingly told him that when he gets married, I'm giving him a currant bush.
and for people who are not familiar, what growing zone are you in Toronto? Because harvesting melons that far north, that's pretty impressive in my mind.
So we're in a USDA zone 5.
Okay.
Zone 5. But what we do is we grow the melons on our garage roof.
Ah.
We have a flat roof garage. It's very hot up there. And so the container gardening up there has been a great way to grow things like melons and okra and peppers, things that love the heat.
I'll be.
That's pretty smart, keeping it exposed to the sun and the heat. So we've really enjoyed having you on the program today, Stephen. How can people find out more about you?
I'm at foodgardenlife.com is my website. And on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, I hang out with the handle Food Garden Life.
And your books are available on your website as well?
Yes, thanks for asking. My books are on the website. So if you're interested in figs or lemons, those are some of my books on niche crops.
Yep, you can grow. You got a book, Grow Lemons Anywhere, I believe is the title. Is that correct?
Yeah, Grow Lemons Where You Think You Can't. And what a lot of people don't realize is, similar to figs, lemons can get a lot colder than people think. So for creative gardeners, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Well, Stephen, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us and the education and the knowledge you've shared. We thank you for that.
Thank you, Joey and Holly.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's going to be your garden questions, our garden answers. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
You move your lawn sprinklers all over the yard, but you always end up putting them in the same spots. Why not just bury them there? Out of sight, always ready to use, pre-adjusted to water the precise areas you want. Quick Snap Sprinklers makes it easy. In-ground sprinklers without the hassle or expense of laying pipe. Put the sprinklers anywhere in your lawn or garden. Snap on a hose to supply the water. Water on, it pops up. Water off, it drops below ground. You can mow right over it. You can have a buried sprinkler system up and running in just minutes. Each Quick Snap saves thousands of dollars. They install in minutes and operate for years. Visit quicksnapsprinkler.com. Rinse Kit, your hose on the go. Pressurized water at your fingertips. Without pumping or battery, simply fill from your spigot or sink on your way out to the garden, beach, or anywhere. Spray it, wash it, Rinse Kit.
Did you know that all flour is not created equal? Janie's Mill carefully stone grinds all their certified organic wheat, rye, corn, buckwheat, and heirloom, and ancient grains so that you get every bit of taste and nutrition nature intended. Some flours really are better than others, and you deserve the best. Get it at janiesmill.com.
The Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Blue Ribbon Organics, Naturally Green Products, Ironwood Tool Company, Easy Step Products, Rinse Kit, Soul Brew Kombucha, Wild Delight, Rincon Vitova, Chip Drop, Bailbuster.com. Find all sponsors at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Question and answer time. You've got a question, we may have an answer for you. You can submit that question at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call, you can jam your fingers in your phone and give us a call toll-free, coast-to-coast, 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-7469. Had a handful of questions come in this week, Holly. Let's see what we can get through to the top of the hour.
So somebody asked, can you eat Jerusalem artichoke or sunchokes raw?
Yes, you can. Basically, what a Jerusalem artichoke is, a root crop that is less starchy than a traditional potato. The story goes that if the European settlers would have brought Jerusalem artichokes back to the United Kingdom when they found South America, or they landed on South America, then the Jerusalem artichoke would be as popular as the potato is today, and the roles would be have been reversed. But yes, you can eat them raw. We talked about it in the first segment, I think it was, or the second segment. You want to peel them. You can scrub them all you want. They're still going to have a dirt taste to them, whether you air fry them as chips, whether you eat them raw and use them as a dip, or you even cook them in a roast or whatever you roast. Put them in there, and they get really soft and buttery, but you still get that earthy taste. Now, if you're cool with that, go ahead and go for it. But peel them. They work really good. They're raw. They can eat them raw. The storage life is not that great on them. So you can do two things that we've found that works very, very well. Dig them up in the fall before the ground freezes. Put them in an airtight Ziploc bag, a couple, like a gallon or half gallon. Put them in the back of the fridge, and as you need them, you can harvest them that way. Or you can take a bucket, put about 2 inches of soil in the bucket, put a layer of artichokes, another layer of soil, and layer them in, and then you can move the soil back as you need them. You can keep them in a unclimatized garage or shed, somewhere where it doesn't freeze, but you can still have access to it. We find the fridge thing works pretty well, keeping them that way in the back in the in the coolest part of the fridge. Not too bad. Had a comment come in, Holly.
Yeah, they said, thank you, born and raised and still here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And you both brought me back to my childhood, late 80s, early 90s, reminding me of watching Outdoor Wisconsin with my dad. I honestly found your channel accidentally while looking on how to take care of a pumpkin plant. I didn't plant any pumpkin seeds, and it was my first year planting anything. Well, thank you for listening.
She captures and views the program on our YouTube channel, which you can find through our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, or you can go to your favorite. You can go to YouTube and put in The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. You can see all of our 160-some-odd shows, 150 shows, something like that, since all five seasons. And you can see what we look like if you care to venture down that road. But we're happy that we were able to bring some memories back to her. I don't know what we did or said.
Outdoor
but,
Wisconsin. That's a good show. Yeah. Program.
But whatever.
What's his name? Dan Smalls.
We said, whatever we did, we're happy that we put a smile on your face. Next question is, my heads on my cabbages are very small, but they're hard and compact. It's been about 90 days since I planted them. Should I continue to let them grow, or is it time to harvest them? And if I harvest them, will I get secondary smaller heads on the stalk? Well, you want to harvest them.
Cabbage is kind of compact.
Right, yeah. But if the cabbage, no matter what size it is, if it's very firm, you want to harvest it, because what happens if you leave it on the plant and you get rain, it will split open. It will pop open and basically kind of explode on itself because there's too much moisture. Go ahead and harvest it. Yes, once you harvest it, if time is still available during the growing season, you will still get little Brussels sprout size cabbages. But that's really the maximum potential that's left in that plant. But yeah, no matter what the size, harvest that cabbage head, because it will blow apart if it rains or you water it. And that's what happens.
Okay, so this is a good question.
Yeah.
How can I save... I mean, they're all good questions. How can I save my shallots that I harvest now for next spring so I can plant them?
Well, what we have always done is we put them in a net, a netting bag, and we hang them in the kitchen for available to cook with. And come springtime, and we've done this too, we've planted in the fall, and they've overwintered and they started growing in the spring. But typically we'll see what we have left in the spring, take that netted bag out to the garden and just plant the shallots. And that's how we saved our shallots over the winter. That's how easy it was for us.
It's pretty black and white. All right. So another question is, I bought a small bale, straw bale, I'm assuming, from Tractor Supply to use as mulch. There's barley coming up everywhere. Do you know if this conditioning process will kill the seeds? Also, since I already broke the baling twine and the flakes are loose, can I dump the rest of the straw in a plastic tote and condition it that way? I'd really like to get rid of all the seeds. Thanks.
Okay. The straw bale garden method by Joe Karsten. You can look that up on our website. Anywhere all of our stuff has something in regards to straw bale gardening. The reason why you have a lot of barley seeds coming up is because the farmer didn't know what he was doing or had a malfunction with the combine because he was kicking out much more grain than he should have been or she should have been. If the combine settings are correct, a small, tiny percentile of grain will bypass through the machine and be kicked out and not be thatched off the grain head. So with this being said, something was amiss and a lot of barley was coming out of the combine. And when it was baled up, all of it started to grow in this bale whenever the conditioning process began, which is a 10-day to 14-day process of water and adding nitrogen, either organic or inorganic methods, of internally creating a humus inside the bale, which is the growing medium for the plants in which you're planting in it. So when it's busted apart, it's best to put it in that plastic container and restring it, you know, compress it in there, get the strings, basically make your homemade bale, because you need that bale to be open to the environment, the elements, in order for the conditioning process to work correctly. It's got to be able to, the water's got to flush out of it. It can't sit in there and sponge up and be this mucky, soppy mess because it will mold and get slime on it. You don't want to condition the bale until about 10 days before you're actually going to plant in it. You can get all the straw bales you want after Halloween, after Christmas, the manger scenes, set them in your yard where you're going to plant, and then not touch them until about 2 weeks before you're actually going to put something in them. Then the conditioning process can begin. But you don't want to condition the bale in a plastic container when the bale has been busted open. Is there really any way to get rid of the barley seeds? The conditioning process, internal temperatures can get between 140 and 160 to 170 degrees as that breakdown process occurs with the nitrogen and the water. That will disable some of the germination of the seeds, but you're always going to have some seeds still germinate on the outer corners, outer portions that are not getting that hotness. There's really not a good way to kill the seeds off. Just don't buy the bale where you bought the bales this year, next year. That's a long way to get to a short answer on that. Well, with that being said, we are out of time, and we thank you for yours. Did you have any miss any portion of the program today or would like to revisit it? Well, you can certainly do that by going to your favorite search engine and typing in the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show, or going to our parent website under the Season 5 tab at the top of the page, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com. Or you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and we'll send you the link to the program. Do not miss the program next week. We are going to be covering practices, garden practices that irritate us. And we'll go over why they irritate us, as well as things that went well in our garden and didn't go so well, and what we're going to do to change it. And our guest will be author Amy Andrew Chesewell, and will answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.